So welcome to another edition of the Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. Joining me from New York is Rafat Ali. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm okay. So we're getting ready to take a break from the show for a little while. So this will be our last show in a little bit.
Yeah. Do you want to? How long is the break going to be?
Well, we'll see. I have to actually go in. I have polycystic kidney disease, and so my kidneys have been on the downswing for the last few months, and so I'm going in for a kidney transplant next week, and my recovery is probably 4 to 6 weeks, so we'll see. It just depends. I might be able to do a podcast but not be able to drive a car, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're all rooting for you, and of course we'll all be praying for you, so hopefully we'll see you back soon.
Yeah, and you've got a lot going on too. You just moved, and you've got your... How's your startup coming along?
Startup is coming along very well. I'm in the midst of a very sort of intensive, small but intensive angel round that I'm putting together for the company. And the launch is scheduled end of June. So that we're not fixed on a date yet, but it will happen, I think, the last week of June.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. It's right. I mean, we're right there. So, yeah, it's back into the thick of things again. So, yes.
No doubt about it. And, you know, the theme of our show today is about kind of unplugging, and you're just overwhelmed right now. I mean, you've gone through a lot when it comes to unplugging versus just being plugged in. I mean,
yes, my whole life for the last 10 years, and so it's apt that the discussion we have today is a very nice, I know, full circle for you as well as for me as well, just in terms of plugging and unplugging and being 1,000% connected to. The next day, guess what? You're 0% connected. How do you do that? So, and I did that when I left paid content and traveled for a year and a half and essentially trying to detox and deplug. And one of the books that I read, which we're very glad that we have the author of it on our show today, Hamlet's Blackberry, left a huge, huge effect in me.
Right, and, by Bill Powers.
By Bill Powers, and this whole thing about leading a balanced digital life. And I did read like at least 100 books in the last year and a half. And people always ask me, what's the one book that you would recommend out of that? And that is overwhelmingly, that's the book.
Wow.
So,
and it's funny because, you know, our lives as kind of media people, you know, it revolves around being online all the time. And I mean, especially doing something like paid content or Media Shift, where, you know, you want to know what's going on literally around the clock. And, you know, it's just, you have to be plugged in. I mean, you look at the way people work, like the guys at Business Insider and some of these blogs, you know, they're just, or Gawker or so many of these places, it just feels like they're just constantly connected, and they can't, you know, if they disconnect for a day or a couple of days, they might miss something, and they just have this, you know, I assume, a feeling of just complete overwhelming, you know, just being overwhelmed at all times.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, doing something digital, like internet startup or something, is hard enough, right? 24/7 to begin with. Then add on top of that, trying to do a 24/7 news site
right
on top of that. So it just, it's completely, as I used to say back then, now, of course, there are a lot of other ways, but I used to say a blog is a beast, you have to keep feeding it. And now, of course, back in those days, Twitter, Facebook, and others didn't even exist. Now it's this all encompassing, sort of all surrounding social media cloud around you that you have to feed all the time as well, in addition to the site and the mobile and everything else that you're doing.
No question. Yeah, the social media aspect, really, I mean, you think about what happened with Twitter and how that became such a vibrant thing. And, I mean, the moment you see the conversation going on there, you get sucked into it. And, you know, hours go by and then you realize how much time you've lost. Same thing with Facebook, Google+, any of these networks. it's very easy to kind of get lost in them. I mean, they're very useful. They really help out in whatever way they do. It's great for connecting with people, having conversations, promoting things. There's so much that's good that comes out of it, but you know, it's just there's always the pull, and the fact that it's on mobile, the fact that we have these mobile devices that are so easy, and smartphones and things that are on us at all times, means that you know we might be having dinner with people, and you know, all of a sudden we want to update someone on Facebook, or we get a text or something. So it's just we're, the always on lifestyle, it takes away from the real life in a way.
Do you have a strategy now that you're literally going into an unplugged month and a half? For most part, do you have a strategy?
I don't know if I'd say I have a strategy. I mean, there have been times before. I'm pretty good about taking one day, taking an actual, you know, technology Sabbath every Saturday. I've been pretty good about it. But yeah, I mean, I'm just gonna see. I'm gonna try not to be connected to work for as much as I can. I'll probably check in here and there. And you know, I initially didn't really think I would have anything on me, but a lot of people are asking, you know, well, I want to know what happens after the transplant. You know, are you going to let us know somehow? And so I figure I'll probably send an email or put something on Twitter or Facebook just to update people. But I have deliberately taken vacations where I said I'm not going to be on, I'm not going to be on work. You know, I try to, sometimes it's about not doing work, and sometimes it's about just not being on technology whatsoever. I know when you've been in some places, I mean, you get that freedom of just being somewhere so disconnected that you have no Wi-Fi, you have no, you know, you might not even have electricity in some places.
Yeah, we were in this is a month and a half ago, I'm gonna say. I was in an island which had no Wi-Fi or no internet for a week, and that was probably the longest I've been without checking my email
How
or
did you
anything really.
survive?
I know, I don't know. I survived. And even when I went on the main island from the small island, it did not have a very slow connection to begin with. So in the other island, so even when I went back after a week, it was still pretty bad. But yeah, that was a good learning experience.
For sure. Well, let's bring on our panel and talk more about unplugging and taking breaks from technology. So we're surrounded by technology and media every day and all day. The smartphones buzzing in our pocket, emails are sitting waiting to be read, social networks demand to know what we're doing this instant. But how can we restore balance in our lives and keep technology from taking them over? Our special guests in this roundtable discussion have some ideas to help out. William Powers is an award-winning journalist and author of the New York Times bestseller, Hamlet's Blackberry: Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. As a Washington Post staff writer, Powers covered business, media, politics, and ideas. And for 10 years, he wrote an influential column about media and politics for the National Journal. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure. Good to be here, Mark.
Tanya Shevitz is National Communications Manager for Reboot, an incubator of Jewish arts and culture. She spent 16 years as a newspaper reporter, including 12 years at the San Francisco Chronicle, where she covered higher education. Welcome to our show.
Thanks. Glad to join you.
And Levi Felix has worked as a VP at an internet startup, Causecast. He's lived on a remote Cambodian island and studied meditation at a Buddhist monastery. He now runs the Digital Detox, a tech-free retreat where attendees unplug in exchange for a weekend of nature, yoga, and peace of mind. Welcome to our show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Bill, let's start with you. You have a background as a journalist, working, you know, tirelessly on columns and breaking news, etc. And then you wrote this book about, you know, Hamlet's Blackberry, and talked about kind of finding balance. How has that worked out? You know, after you wrote the book, did your life change a lot in any way when it comes to technology?
Yeah, Mark. It changed on two levels. One is that so the message of the book is that you can unplug and strike a balance without rejecting technology. That we kind of all have to move to a place in the digital world where we use these tools more wisely, because let's face it, these tools are going to be defining the future. And so the book helped me figure out my own strategy for doing that. And so on one level, it really helped me. And I'm happy to talk about some of the details if we get to that. But it really, I was able to take a little time and really give some thought to the best way to strike a balance. And that was really, really useful for me because, as you know, journalists these days are feeling like they have to be connected 24/7 or they're missing the news. And that's a very tricky territory to get into because once you start being connected 24/7, I think you pay a price. But ironically, just in a humorous way, because the book has had some success, I'm actually spending all this time in digital world connecting, like right now, more <All right. laughs> in some ways more than before. But the nice thing is I'm bringing this message that's about taking a new approach. So that's been very gratifying.
So what is your personal practice? Do you take, you know, this kind of like tech Sabbath, like a day? I usually take kind of Friday night to Saturday night and try to not be connected to work at least. But what do you, I mean, how do you define certain times or certain places where you don't have technology or media around you?
Yes. So what we do in our family, so in my house, it's my wife and me and our son who is 14. But we started 5 years ago, actually, when my son was really 8 or 9. We started unplugging for the whole weekend. And we do it Friday night, and we don't plug in again until Monday morning. And we call it the Internet Sabbath, which is a name we just came up with on our own 5 years ago. And then it turns out that all kinds of people, including Tanya and all kinds of people all over the place, were sort of having the same thought and calling these things Sabbaths or sabbaticals. And we've stuck to that faithfully for all those years. We've lately had to reboot it a little bit because I'm doing a project in Cambridge where I'm working with people who are talking a lot about the project on the weekends. So now we have Saturday as our one sacrosanct day. Sometimes Sunday is online, sometimes it's offline.
That's great. So Tanya, tell us more about this Sabbath Manifesto and what Reboot is all about. I know there's kind of a day of unplugging in March where you kind of ask everyone to kind of take one day to unplug. What's the manifesto all about?
Right. Well, we had our third annual National Day of Unplugging this March, and it was launched in 2010 as kind of the one day to highlight our ongoing project, which is the Sabbath Manifesto, as you mentioned. And the Sabbath Manifesto was really created by a group of people who were overwhelmed with the constant deluge of technology and who wanted to reclaim this ancient day of rest, the traditional Jewish Sabbath. And these are people who are, you know, live with technology in their lives constantly because that's their jobs. People ranging from Dan Rollman, who has an online record setting, like world record website called recordsetter.com, and to Greg Klayman, who's the publisher of The Daily. And so they rely on technology and are very plugged in, but yet they craved some sort of respite, a break from it. So the Sabbath Manifesto was created by these people and kind of powered and continued by Reboot, their members of our organization, to really help people recognize that they need a balance. In no way are we anti-technology. We recognize the value and benefit of it. But just we believe that by taking some sort of rest, like William does, like Bill does, you gain something back. You reconnect with yourself. You reconnect with the world around you, your family, and you're more productive. And you also see how dependent you are on technology. And I think that's really an important component. It's only when you take a rest from it that you can see how addicted you are.
And this isn't something just for Jewish people. This is something you're kind of pushing to just the wider connected society.
Right, absolutely. Well, it's rooted in the idea of the Jewish Sabbath. We recognize that everyone needs a break. Really, everyone is just overwhelmed with, like you said, the constant buzzing of the phone, the emails, the texts, the checking in on Facebook, the foursquaring, and that everyone needs a day of rest. And we're not at all saying that it has to be Friday to Saturday. We're saying whenever it works for you, you should take it. And although we have the National Day of Unplugging once a year in March, the Sabbath Manifesto really encourages people to take a weekly break like Bill does. That's the only way you can really get some relief. The National Day of Unplugging is great because it gets a lot of attention. And we've been written up by the New York Times, Wall Street Journal. It was Katie Couric told the nation to unplug the first year. It was on Jimmy Fallon. Ashton Kutcher even tweeted about it this year. So that highlights it and brings attention to it. But we really hope that people will take the message that there needs to be a regular break in their lives. And it's really for everyone because everyone needs this.
So this is Rafa. Levi, this question for you. So you're doing these retreats where people come for, I guess, a weekend. And my question is, when people are one of the things that I've been going through for the last 3 years, and my whole life for the last 3-4 years has been defined by trying to sort of cut away from technology, at least have a more balanced work-life balance. And I've done it to a large extent, but I'm getting sucked back into it again because I'm doing another startup. But as I traveled, I've been traveling for the last 2 years. I've gone to 15 different countries, done all kinds of stuff. It's interesting that travel does allow you to disconnect to some extent, but then these days the amount of sort of connection you have in travel is also overwhelming travel as well. So I'm just wondering, since you run a retreat that I guess is semi-travel to some extent, what are the kind of suggestions or what are you seeing with the people that you're working with?
Well, actually, I just returned from about 2.5 years of travel after I left or took my sabbatical from being in the internet startup world.
So we have a similar path, I suppose, in that sense.
Yeah, and so I think the most important thing to remember is that there's always going to be more work to do. There's always going to be that other email, that new idea to flesh out in a Google document. There's always going to be someone else to call. There's always going to be a tree or a poster or a sunset to Instagram or put on the internet. And at some point, we have to realize that, you know, are we archiving our life?
I know. It's my life. Yes.
But, you know, we question, are we archiving our lives for ourselves or for other people? And so I think, you know, for the traveler, at some point, you realize, you know, okay, what, you step back and you breathe. What is the point of the documentation, of the connection to everybody? And so I guess, you know, the goal in our retreats is to give people the chance and the opportunity to step back and reevaluate, you know, their friendships, make lists of their top 50, you know, friends or connections in life, and then break that down into, you know, close, closer, and closest, and evaluate, okay, how often am I talking to people who I find most valuable or most important in my life? You know, what experiences am I doing that make me happiest, and am I doing those? And so, you know, looking at the mix of technology and, you know, what brings us happiness or what brings us success in life, and finding that balance, you know, we're in no way Luddites, you know, we love technology, you know, we couldn't have these conversations if it wasn't for it. But I think it's about finding, you know, finding the purpose and the foundation of why we're doing what we do, and then trying to create a filter with our daily lives, an approach, you know, where we're not, you know, we're not slaves to our devices and they're not using us, but we're using them. So yeah, with the digital detox, our goal is really to give people the permission. You know, it's really hard in our day-to-day life to find the space to detach, you know, our social pressures, our relational pressures, our jobs, information overload. We feel like we always need to get more. So if we can give ourselves permission, whether it's with a Shabbat sabbatical over the weekend or an hour before you, you know, start work in the morning, or even over meals, you know, finding a sacred space around meals with friends and family, or even by yourself, where, you know, we're not using technology, that gives us the space to breathe, reflect, and actually, you know, be more creative in our life.
And what about the people who go on these retreats? Do you find sometimes they have these kind of withdrawal symptoms or the feeling like they need to get to their device? Do you kind of hold the device from them or something?
Yeah, so when attendees show up, we actually have a ceremony where we take their cell phone, we take their computer, we take their Kindle, anything electronic, and we organize the retreats in settings where there's no service anyways. But we, you know, we have a kind of a do's and don't lists, and on the don'ts, it's obviously, we discourage the use of technology. But there's always going to be some sort of withdrawal. I think the most common one, ironically, is the phantom pocket, you know, vibration that we all get after being on our cell phones for so long. And individuals find that, you know, bizarre and weird, but, you know, I don't even have a pocket, and why do I feel like my cell phone is buzzing? you know, I think something else that's interesting, and I witnessed it while I was living on this, I lived on a remote island in Cambodia with only 9 other people, and we had guests coming every day, but for 6 months, And when there's big catastrophes in the world, or when there's, you know, major events that, you know, we care about and we're empathetic towards, but we can't do anything immediate, you know, we still feel the need to talk about it or tweet it or Facebook it. For example, the tsunami in Japan. And I found people who that were with us on the island, you know, in the form of digital detox, you know, they felt like they needed to connect. And although they had all the up-to-date information, you know, based on someone who just arrived to the island, you know, we had big discussions about, okay, what does it mean as individuals to not be able to express our feelings on the internet? Does that mean we still don't have feelings, or does that mean that we're not connected? So I think there's always a sense of, you know, technology withdrawal, you know, information, anxiety, you know, and feeling disconnected. But I think by talking to people and giving people ideas and writing prompts to express themselves and discover the foundation of why what they're feeling, it's, you know, it can be very beneficial.
We also, this is Tanya, we take away people's cell phones. we take away people's cell phones at our events, our unplugging events. And we had a party, an unplugged party at South by Southwest Interactive, which is basically the most plugged in place in the world.
That sounds impossible.
And I was shocked how much people embraced it. I mean, we had almost 200 people come into this party, and they had to come in. When they came into the party, they had to put their cell phones into a cell phone sleeping bag, shut them off, put them in the cell phone sleeping bag. And for an hour and a half, there was this room full of people in a bar actually just talking to each other, no cell phones, no distractions. And afterward, this woman came up to me and she said, I mean, it couldn't have been scripted better. She literally said, oh my gosh, my friends and I had the most amazing conversations. We would not have had those conversations if we had had our phones with us. She said, we don't ever do this. You know what I mean? People are just not used to being together for an hour and a half without their phones. And it was striking to see the change. And I think that all of them left there thinking, wow, you know, I can do this. And it's really these little steps and the little recognitions. And even at work, people put into place policies where, like in Germany, there are some companies that say, like, they don't allow their employees to email, and they won't email their employees after work hours. Courtney Holt, who is the former president of MySpace Music and is a rebooter and is now at a place called Maker Studios, he spoke on our official panel at South by Southwest. He's a, as I said, he's a rebooter. And he said that they have a policy at his company he's instituted where when there's an email to a group of people, they make it clear that only the one person it's directly addressed to, not all the people who are CC'd, have to respond. Because often when you get an email, so you know, you're CC'd on 50 emails a day, you feel like you have to respond to everyone. It's like, okay, you feel like otherwise people will be thinking you're not reading the emails or you're not working hard enough. And he put in that policy because people feel like, and this is a problem in society, I think in general, people feel like they need to always be reachable and they need to always show that they're online. And so there is no break because you get an email at midnight, you're like, oh, I need to respond right now, even though it's most likely not urgent. And so the Sabbath Manifesto really is just trying to get people to pause and realize that most things are not a 911 situation. Most things are not an emergency situation where you have to respond and have to be reachable at any moment. And we think that just slowing down your life starts with unplugging, or at least taking a step like putting your phone on a shelf until your kids are in bed or until you've had a dinner with your spouse or partner. Just taking little steps toward that. And then, you know, eventually, if you can, unplugging for 24 hours or for an entire weekend like Bill did.
Have you noticed since your book came out, has there been any kind of change in etiquette? I mean, the etiquette part of it seems to be a real problem. And we did a Five Across show just about cell phone etiquette and just how poor it is. I mean, do you feel like there's any kind of growing awareness around that?
Yeah, actually, Mark, I have found that so I actually started writing the book 4 years ago, and then the book came out 2 years ago. So I have a pretty long range view of this. Right. And I have noticed the etiquette really evolving in a good way. And I can just give you one example. You know, not so long ago, people were still answering cell phones during Broadway shows. That was considered like something, it was kind of okay to sneak and do that. And then the Broadway singer Patti LuPone stopped a show when someone did that and pointed to the person in the audience and said, "Turn that thing off or we're not continuing." And the whole thing shifted. The New York Times wrote about it, and people stopped doing that because everybody woke up and said, "Wait a minute, this is really stupid. You know, this makes no sense that we're living this way." And I've noticed in small ways, there are lots of things. A lot of people don't use ringtones anymore for the same reason. That's beginning to seem like that was ridiculous. Why was I alerting everybody else to my phone call? And so I think it's really coming down a good road, and we're kind of gradually getting better at it. I've also noticed more generally, I mean, Tanya pointed to this. In some ways, the technology culture and even the devices themselves can really help us get to a better place, because you just have to become more thoughtful about how you use, like, for example, email in a corporate culture. It doesn't make sense a lot of times to use an email to discuss something with somebody when you could use face-to-face conversation or just live chat. You know, talking with someone on Google Chat, you can get a lot more done sometimes than emailing that person and CCing five others. And a lot of companies are instituting policies like this that are, I think, taking us to a much better place. So we should include the possibility of technology helping us, and I think we've only begun to explore that.
I had a question. So, Bill, is your book, Hamless BlackBerry, sort of weaves together multiple eras of how people dealt with technology in different eras. Do you think this is, I feel like this is a clearly unique situation in time where it just seems impossible beyond a certain point that the civilization can deal with it in its current situation. Do you agree or not disagree? I'm guessing your book sort of says otherwise.
Yeah, my book says otherwise. It's a hard argument to make, Rafat, because we do feel the pressure every day, and it feels like, oh, nobody's ever been through this before, and I sort of wake up many days and feel that way. But if you really go back and read deeply into previous eras of technological change, which is what I did for the book, and I recount all this in the book, I look at ancient Greece, ancient Rome, Renaissance Europe, all these different periods, people said the same thing about those periods. People, believe it or not, felt overwhelmed by the printing press and the inability to keep up with what was being printed. They thought they were going crazy, and they didn't know what to do about it. And they tried all kinds of bizarre rituals and so forth to get around this feeling of overload. It's not about so much the moment you live in as the fact that it's different from the moment you lived in 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So no matter where you are, it's about where you came from. In ancient Greece, it was the alphabet. People literally felt like, wow, stuff is written down now. This is driving me nuts. Other people saw the promise of it. So the message of my book is to offer people some solace by looking at the past. I really do believe that we have basically been here before. We're seeing a different version of something that mankind has been going through since the beginning of civilization and will continue to. And we can do it. We can get past it as people did in the past and be constructive and creative about it.
Well, what do you guys say? I mean, we've talked about tech overload before. There's always kind of some people who just say, I need to be connected all the time. You know, I can't, my job requires that I'm always online. I might miss piece of news on Saturday night. How do you respond to the people who just basically feel like they need to be connected for work all the time?
I think that that's an expectation that has been created but isn't really true. This is Tanya. There's a professor at the Harvard Business School who wrote a book about this, and I can't remember the name right now, but it was about actually the pressure of work. And she had her business students set up a system where each one of them had a calendar, and each one of them had to unplug at night for a week. And if they did not unplug, their classmates derided them and were angry at them. And there was a lot of pressure on them. If they did unplug, they got a lot of praise. And they also learned the benefits of it. And by the end of that experiment, they were starting to feel better about it and feeling like they could unplug and it was okay. And it felt natural to them and they enjoyed it. Whereas before, they literally could not unplug even for an hour because they were so freaked out that they'd be missing an email or a phone call from the boss, or, you know, wouldn't be able to get a presentation done. And it's really like I had said before, it's really the expectation that has been created into today's society that creates this pressure anxiety about being online all the time. So if there's kind of an, I think there is a momentum right now, some sort of movement. I mean, you have all of us, but it's just, it really is. If you Google these terms, unplugging or digital detox, that type of thing, there is a movement today and people are feeling it and craving some sort of break. So if it becomes more accepted and the practice, then it will be okay. And people will, you know, do this more regularly.
This is Levi. I think it's really interesting. There's a study at Stanford where they surveyed and interviewed a lot of individuals and asked when their best ideas came from. And it was from napping and from driving and showering and walking in nature. And Nicholas Carr discusses this in The Shallows, as well as Thomas Cooper and Fast Media, Media Fast. And there's also a study when individuals were walking either in a park during a break or they were taking time walking around buildings. And they found that those who walked around the parks or walked around nature were actually more successful at tasks when they returned to their computers. And you know, there's a lot of value in taking even half an hour during your busy day to unplug. You know, there's the clarity, the calmness, the focus, insight, all these benefits, you know, from a practice, whether it's meditation or mindfulness or just simply sitting and doing another task that's not on technology. The value for someone who's plugged in and working in the startup world or working in the creative world or, you know, any form of industry that requires them to be plugged in 24/7, there's incredible value in just, you know, in just taking a small chunk of the day and having time to reflect and look inward. So, you know, I think for someone who's plugged in, you know, I think it's a movement as well within these movers and shakers that they realize, yeah, I think it's time to have some me time and us time to be more successful when we're not online and when we are.
And I think that's a message that really needs to be taken to kids too as well. I mean, kids see us all plugged in all the time and therefore they think it's totally okay to be plugged in. And so we need to let our kids know that downtime is important, that that's the creative time. I mean, for my kids, I can see their addiction. If they think they might get TV time or video game time, then they cannot think of anything else. They just literally ask me nonstop, bugging me, begging, crying. But if I say, okay, this weekend there is nothing, no TV, no video games, they suddenly, you know, they're building something with Legos or they're making a fort in the kitchen. They really get so creative. But if they're focused on the idea of having TV or video games, they literally cannot think of anything else. And it takes a little time to almost for them to detox as well. But it's amazing the difference.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. We really appreciate you coming on. It's a really interesting discussion.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. Along with our co-host, Rafat Ali, we want to thank our guests, Bill Powers, Tanya Shevitz, and Levi Felix for joining us, as well as PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Be sure to keep up with all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift and our sister site, IdeaLab, at pbs.org/IdeaLab and our new site, Collaboration Central, at collaborationcentral.org. We'll be on break for about a month, but we'll catch you later in the summer. One.